surprised that you and I are still in conversation after our teams collided on the college gridiron this weekend.
Hey, you know, it was a 7-point game.
It was.
Fourth quarter.
It was going into the fourth quarter.
What was the final score?
And then it turned into a 52-17 game. How in God's name did that happen? Also, you have two teams and will get revenge on me. Sweet, sweet revenge later. So I only get to be happy about it for now. And then,
thank God.
Because you're Ohio State fan.
Really hate when you're happy.
I really hate that you just jump on as many bandwagons as.
Yeah.
Can try like being a Rockies fan.
Yeah, you know me, the bandwagon jumper. Yeah,
I mean, why on earth would anyone not be on this one?
It's been a while since we talked to you guys.
Welcome in episode number 87 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I'm Tyler Mullen,
and I'm Anthony Masterson. And we looked at the record since our last podcast for the Rockies. We expected it to be a lot worse than it actually was. They're actually 9-10 since we last talked to you.
How is that possible?
I really don't know.
Because I really thought that they had lost every game.
Well, you know why? Because they played three series against teams with winning records. And then they played three series against teams with losing records. And so it kind of just evens out.
And they're good in one of those, and they are not good in the other. Well, here's what we got coming up on the show today. Not really sure, because we don't really know what to talk about with this team anymore. No, that is going to be one topic that we cover heavily. How and why the Rockies are so bad against bad teams, and how and why they're so good against good teams. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. We're also going to talk about the way that some of these rookies, especially the rookie pitchers, have started to hit a wall at the end of the 2016 season, which, not necessarily a bad thing.
No.
We'll talk about that. We'll also discuss some of your Ask PDP questions, and we will discuss as well the evergreen topic of one Walter William Weiss and whether he will be back for the 2017 season and beyond. But your Colorado Rockies somehow 9-10 and still somehow above 500 since the All-Star break.
Yeah. I mean, they have got the nicest amount of wins you're ever going to find right
now. This is a nice season.
69-77. And but I think before the season started, we made our predictions of what we thought the 2016 season would bring. And I said, I think they would match the 2006 season, if not one up them and get 77 wins. Now, that still very much is a possibility at this point. See how many more winning teams they play. Oh, good. They play the Cardinals, the Dodgers, and the Giants again. So, yeah, the Rockies have a chance to win at least three more series because they got the Padres and the Brewers in there as well. So there's a good chance that my prediction before the year could be correct, around 77 wins, and that would be a very nice step forward considering what we've seen with this team this season.
Yeah, definitely.
But it really does seem like they're just kind of playing out the string. That Arizona series was atrocious.
Brutal.
265 runs scored in the season series this season with the Arizona Diamondbacks. That is the most in any season series in Major League history.
Good God almighty.
Yeah. D-backs got 10 hits in, I believe, 13 straight games. First time that's happened in 86 years.
17 in back-to-back games.
Yeah. They had 16 in the first game, so the Rockies' pitching staff really held them down.
Yeah, they really buckled down in game one.
Yeah. No, they said, I was looking at this yesterday, the last time that a team got 13 straight games of 10-plus hits against the same opponent in one season was the Brooklyn Robins back in 1930 against the Phillies.
Oh, my God.
Good for the D-backs, yeah.
And that was at the beginning of the Depression when they were heavily rationing hits. Also.
Yeah.
So that makes it even weirder.
Yeah. They had teams playing in Hoovervilles.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're all playing, the baseballs were made out of dead mice and the bats were soaked newspapers that they wrapped together. It was a weird time in 1930 National League play.
I mean, there was, they didn't have to ration all the dead mice because the mice were just dying in an
alarming
rate globally.
The mice were dying everywhere. But that was the only thing that didn't ration. They were rationing hits and still the Brooklyn Robins just crushing the baseball over the yard. Against the Phillies. Yeah, so that's good.
Was it?
That's good. That is that's good to give up 10-plus hits in 13 straight games against an opponent, or 13-plus hits in 10 straight games. Does it even matter at this point?
I mean,
which it was?
No. I mean, they got 10 a couple of times.
Yeah. Like I said, really buckling down.
Yeah.
Really, pitching staff's really bringing it. But that's really been the theme of the 2016 season for the Colorado Rockies. And Anthony has some numbers on just how much of a theme that has been. The Rockies, as we've noted, have played very, very well against good competition. And for some reason, against horrible teams like the Brewers and the Phillies and the Padres
and the Diamondbacks,
they play like a bad team. And
like a really bad team.
And historically so, in fact.
Yeah, so this year, the Rockies against teams that are 500 or better have an overall record of 40-37, which is very good. It's the sixth best mark in all of baseball. Only the Rangers, Blue Jays, Cubs, Mets, and Nationals have better marks against teams that are 500 or better.
All of those teams could make the playoffs. The majority of them will make the playoffs.
And the teams right behind them in that line, the Dodgers, the Red Sox, the Indians, the Yankees, the Orioles, the Mariners.
My God.
Again, teams who either will make the playoffs or probably will make the playoffs.
What on earth?
Yeah, they're the only team that's in there that has no chance of making the playoffs at all until you get down to number 13, the Chicago White Sox, who are 49-58.
Yes, that's not even a good mark.
No, it's not.
Okay,
but
continue.
And then you look at it when they're playing teams that are under 500, and the team is 29-40. That is the worst mark in all of baseball. Even worse than the Braves, A's, Twins, Padres, it is atrocious. And that is, in fact,
doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make sense. And for the Rockies themselves, that is by far their worst mark ever in a single season against teams that are under 500. 29-40 is the worst in their 24 season history. The worst previous mark was 2005 when they were 40-47. That's a 460 win percentage. This year, their win percentage is 420.
Also nice.
And in terms
of
hell? Teams 500 or better, just in Rockies history, this 2016 mark is pretty close to being up there with the best that they have seen. It is the fourth best currently behind 2007, 2010, and oddly enough, 1996. But this is something that we have not really seen from the Rockies. They're playing to the competition, which half the time is a good thing. But to be able to be a playoff team, make that next step, you're going to need to beat the teams you should beat. And right now, that is not a thing the Rockies have been doing at all this year.
What is their combined record against the Padres and the D-backs? Because the Padres and D-backs combined right now have won 123 games and have lost 168. The Padres are 62-84. The D-backs are 61-84. Both of them have been eliminated from the division race, not surprisingly. I mean, the Rockies, when they come back to win this division, people are going to be surprised because their elimination number is still four.
Yeah, still possible. Still kicking.
Still possible. They're eight games back in the wild card, but they have really, really shot themselves in the foot the way they've played the Padres and the D-backs.
They are 16-19 combined against the Padres and D-backs this
and those
year,
are
which,
teams,
which honestly is
better. Yeah, it's better than I thought, but those are teams in your division. You've played 35 games against those teams as of right now. You have to have at least 20 wins in those 35 games.
At the very least.
At the very least. And they have just killed themselves against teams like that. They've killed themselves against teams like the Reds.
And the Dodgers and Giants combined, they're 15-16.
What?
Which usually, in a given season, you usually take that.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds
like you're
going
to beat up on the Padres and Diamondbacks.
Exactly. That seems like a bellwether type of year.
Yeah.
By the way, I mean, we can complain all we want, but man, how about those San Francisco Giants? Since the All-Star.
I don't even know what to say, man.
What on earth?
What on earth?
What has happened there?
And they're still in a playoff spot.
Yeah.
That's the thing that sucks, is that they could not have been playing worse since the All-Star break, and they still hold a half-game lead for the first playoff spot.
I do not get it at all.
Yeah, even year magic, man.
The Giants on the Giants on July 8th. On July 8th, were 55-33. And they were 6.5 games up on the Dodgers on July 8th. On September 15th, they're now 77-68, and they're 5 games back of the Dodgers. And the Dodgers, by the way, have been fielding a team that they recruited from like a local infirmary.
Yeah.
It's like burn ward victims and like people who are like missing eyeballs. And
there's a lot of
the
gout.
Dodgers. Yeah. Just get scurvy. a lot of stuff going on. And Brett Anderson. And yeah. they somehow have surged into the lead in the division. They're five games up on the
Yeah, Clayton Kershaw went out, and they became one of the best teams in baseball.
Yeah!
Proves they don't need him. Proves he's a bust.
Yeah, he's overrated. Overrated player. They sent Yasiel Puig to AAA and somehow continued just crushing baseballs all over the place.
Dave Roberts got to be manager of the year, right? I mean,
yeah, I would think so. I would think so.
Girardi might get it anyway in the American League, even if the Yankees don't make the playoffs.
That's true. That's true too. But I mean, that really is the story of the 2016 Rockies. When they author the postscript of the 2016 Rockies, it will be playing down to bad competition, the 2016 Rockies story. And the thing that's so weird about it is it's one of those things that really has no explanation.
Yeah.
You can't look at the numbers and divine a reason why the Rockies are bad against bad teams. Don't try to tell me, sabermetrics war, what is it good for? But you can't. It's just one of those weird things in sports that doesn't make sense. And so I guess in a way it segues us to a topic that we wanted to discuss. Does it fall on Walt Weiss and the coaching staff?
I mean, yeah, this is something that we can talk about for a long time, I believe, because
we're going to talk about this every episode this year.
Yeah. Do we think that Walt Weiss is going to make it, you know, going into next year? It's at some point when you see a team playing like this against the bad teams, it does have to speak to coaching at some point. I mean, yes, we know at this stage in the season, we have some pitchers hitting the rookie walls, John Gray, Tyler Anderson, Jeff Hoffman, maybe not be quite ready for the grand lights of Chase Field yet. But I don't know. It's at some point, the message is getting lost somewhere along the line. And whether or not that is the leadership in the clubhouse, that the players need to step up and say, hey, you know, the season's not over yet. We still have two more weeks. You know, pull your heads out. Let's do this. Or if it falls on the coaching staff, who has to basically do the same thing. You wonder whether or not the guys are listening to Walt Weiss anymore, or whether or not they ever were, to be honest. Because this team is very talented. They can get by to a certain extent on the talent they actually have. But it's the other issues that Walt Weiss might have. It's the bullpen management. It's playing Gerardo Parra all of the time. It's an organizational thing. It could be with not calling up Tommy Murphy or Jordan Patterson when guys got injured at the big league level. And
I heard that Jordan Patterson had been called up.
Yeah.
I don't believe that is true. I don't believe that Jordan Patterson has actually been called up. I think maybe they put someone in a Jordan Patterson jersey one game, but other than that, I don't think he's played at all.
It was basically like a contest in the stands. Like, hey, come on down. You can get it a free at bat. Section 124, Rose.
Jordan Patterson
H, seat 7. Come on down.
Yeah. I don't get it.
You wonder whether or not the message has gotten lost again over Walt Weiss, because this is right now his fourth season, and he is going to be nowhere close to 500 in either of those four seasons. And I don't want the Rockies to become the Rams and keep hiring Jeff Fisher for a 7-9 season every damn year. Like, I know the Rockies can make that easy claim that, you know, the big thing now with with the Rams and Jeff Fisher is that, how does this guy keep getting work? Because he's basically 7-9 every year, if that. And right now, that's kind of what the Rockies have been under Walt Weiss. They have been a very middling team, and yet he keeps coming back, and the team doesn't seem to be showing a ton of signs of improvement. And yes, they have shown that this team is better than they were last year, 2 years ago, but the season's not over yet. You still got to play hard to the end, and it does not seem like that is the case right now. And some of that has to fall on Walt Weiss.
We get regular stories every year of, you know, the team loves Walt Weiss. He's well liked in the clubhouse. He's and granted, you know, there are stories that come from Ringlesby, so who knows? But that does seem to be the common thread that comes out every year. But I think at some stage, the argument has to be made that we've seen Jeff Breidich make a change in virtually every area of the organization that was not his, and Walt Weiss was not his. I really like Walt Weiss. I think he's a super nice guy. I think in a different situation, I think his skill set as a manager really translates very well. I think he's a good people person type of manager. I think he's a player's manager in the way that he lets guys go out, do their thing. And I think with more oversight, You know, if this is a circumstance where it was like Clint Hurdle with the Pirates, where he had a front office that was very hands-on, this is how we want you to run a lineup, this is how we want you to rest guys, yada, yada. I think there's a successful vehicle out there for Walt Weiss, but I don't think this is it.
Yeah, I don't think it's the purple Batmobile.
And it continually comes back for me to the fact that Jeff Breidich has put his stamp on everywhere else. Why would he not want to do that with a coaching staff when he has set himself up for 2017, opening up these few years of this team being ostensibly very good based on the talent that they have promoted this year, kind of being the tip of the spear for next year and beyond? Why would he not want his guys in that position? And furthermore, if this was Walt Weiss's team going forward and Jeff Breidich in the front office were very content and not just content, but were very excited about that possibility, I think we would have heard of an extension by now. I don't think Walt Weiss would be twisting in the wind a month before the end of the season, the month before the end of his contract, waiting to figure out what 2017 looked like.
You'd have to imagine that wouldn't be the case. I mean, that would be,
that just doesn't seem like
weird
good business.
Way to do business. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
And it seems like Jeff Breidich is better than that.
He went to Harvard, you know. He went to Harvard.
Did you know that Walt Weiss coached in high school before he got to be the manager of the Colorado Rockies?
Did you know that Trevor Siemian went to Northwestern and almost went to business school rather than playing in the NFL?
That Greg Reynolds was drafted before Evan Longoria? This is it right now for Walt Weiss. This is the end of his contract, and right now he does not have an extension. As we have not heard anything about an extension yet, and that is very, very weird that it is September 15th when we're recording this podcast, and he does not have the Rockies don't have a manager for next year. I mean,
basically, yeah, the Rockies have zero. I believe the entire coaching staff. They have no one under contract for 2017. I think it's pretty much what it comes down to. I mean, if that was the plan, there's no reason to not get it done already, which is what leads me to believe that there will be a change. I mean, if we're taking sides in this, I think...
And we are.
I think more than likely there is a change after the season.
Yeah.
And
because if you would have seen what you wanted to see from the players, and to a point you did before the last week or so, when the team was, you know, 5 games under 500 and, you know, not really in the race, but still being put on graphics saying they're in the wild card, like whatever. It's in September when that was happening. You can say, okay, this team has shown enough promises here. They've taken enough steps forward under the tutelage of Walt Weiss that I want to bring him back for when this finally reaches the apex. We finally get to the top, finally get over that hump of being just a team that's kind of laying in the weeds or rebuilding or whatever. When we start becoming contenders again, I've seen Walt Weiss take care of these kids. I wanted to be there when they actually become superstars. And you would think that would have happened already, but it's not there.
Yeah.
And I assume that when we end this podcast, Breidich will come out and say they signed Walt Weiss to an extension for the next 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. Undoubtedly. Yeah. A lifetime handshake.
That's always how it works.
He'll get the old Mike Shanahan contract.
I love looking back through on the Cotts baseball contracts to the managers for the Rockies. You know, they got Walt Weiss 3-year extension. Then they go to former manager Jim Tracy. 2013, agreed to quote unquote indefinite handshake extension with Colorado. February 2012. Resigned as manager October 7th, 2012, with $1.4 million left on deal for 2013.
The amount of managers at the Rockies... I mean, I guess really it's just him and Jim Leland, but the amount of, like, of successful elsewhere managers that the Rockies have brought in who have just been destroyed in short times in Colorado. Those two, you know, Jim Leland, you know, say what you will about Jim Leland, one of the most successful managers in recent Major League history. And Jim Leland lasted 1 year here and then was like, I'm not even going to stay in baseball. I'm going to retire from baseball entirely. I cannot handle this sport. I can't handle these people. I'm done. Jim Tracy takes over in 2009 and leads the greatest turnaround. Everybody talks about the 07 team in Rocktober. What the 09 team did after Clint Hurdle was fired was like the greatest single season 180 in Denver sports history. And by 3 years later, he was like, get me the hell out of here. I cannot handle it. Can't handle it. And that was after they were like, we'll let you run this. We'll let you tap this job as long as you want, man. And he was like, nah, I'm good. Thanks. No, it's all right. I'm okay.
Oh, my God.
But I mean, I just think what it ultimately comes back to is the fact that this was not a Jeff Breidich hire, and Jeff Breidich has shown that he wants his people in his positions, and why would you blame him for that?
Yeah.
So
there's no reason why they wouldn't want to try to find somebody else out there. Now, whoever that may be, I have no idea. You know, we've hypothesized on this show that Joe Girardi would be fired by the Yankees once the Yankees fell flat this year
and
stumbled to another non-playoff season. And yet then he came back and might be bringing the team full of
zombie
toddlers. Yeah.
Yeah. Toward the playoffs.
Good for Joe.
And, you know, not just in a race to the, for the wild card. I mean, the Yankees right now are sort of in the mix. The AL postseason race is the craziest thing.
The Yankees are four back of
the division.
And two games back of the wild card.
Right now, the American League East, the Red Sox 81-64, the Orioles are a game back, the Blue Jays are two games back, the Yankees are four games back. And in the AL wild card, there are three teams right now tied for two wild card positions. Or no, check that. Detroit now is one game back of Baltimore and Toronto. But Seattle is a half game back of Detroit. The Yankees are a half game back of Seattle. And Houston is a game and a half back of the Yankees. And then the Royals, the left for dead Royals are only five games out.
Yeah, but they just got swept by the A's. So
yeah, true. So there are seven
teams.
That
didn't help.
There are seven teams either leading in the wild card or within five games trailing in the wild card.
Yeah.
And that's absurd.
Well, the Rockies are they're only eight games back of the wild card.
They're hanging in. They're hanging in. Their elimination number in the wild card is nine. So still there to make a run.
Let's do it.
You know, make it happen.
Hey, they got a good team coming into town Monday.
So they should be able to
make up some ground.
Yeah, exactly. Start picking up ground.
I'm just saying they have a 10-game stretch against the Cardinals, Dodgers, and Giants. I'm saying 7-2.
They'll probably go
7-3.
They'll probably go unbeaten over that.
8-2.
10-game winning streak, they'd be 79-77. You're right in the mix.
Right in the mix.
Make it happen. Make it happen, Captain. So anyway, we're both in agreement that we think this is the close of Walt Weiss. And with that, yes, by the end of the day today, Walt Weiss will have been signed to a Mike Shanahan, Jim Tracy like indefinite contract. And you can thank us for that. And Walt, we accept, checks, Venmo, PayPal, whatever you have for the reverse PDP jinx.
Did you see the dude who on College Game Day last week who put his Venmo
number
up on the college sign on College Game Day and got paid like $1,000
or
something?
Yeah, like 250 people donated money to that guy.
Brilliant.
Good God. Ugh. People.
And they say the youth of America is, you know, people taking us into the dumper.
Yeah. These kids today. Meh. What about the kid who ran on the field in San Francisco and put his number on his chest?
Because he thought it would be hella sweet.
He got hella calls, and he was hella scared when he got on the field, too.
No, but also, he's a minor, and so the cops were like, "Well,
go.
All right, see you later." Okay.
And like, I thought my dad was going to be mad, but he really told me he was proud of me and thought it was great. Well, your dad sucks.
Oh, yeah, that home life has to just be bad. Exactly. We should probably call child services.
Oh, Lord. All right, so we've covered a couple of things. The Rockies are bad against teams under 500. We don't believe that Walt Weiss will be back for 2017. So let's dive into another topic, which is the struggles of late of the young core group of Rockies starting pitchers. Let's call them the core three. No, is that not? Is that not a thing?
We could probably think of a cooler name.
I just want to be
maybe one that rhymes with three.
The tree three.
Because we're gonna go out on a limb and say they're gonna bring it back to the playoffs.
A limb, tree puns.
Thank you.
Well, let's talk about those three because we would love to talk about like Germán Márquez. He's only made a couple of appearances.
Yeah. Looked good in his last one, not so great in his first one, but yeah, whatever. won the trade still.
You can definitely see, yeah, still won the trade. You can definitely see how the stuff is very much there. Even in that first one, how the stuff is very much there with Ramon Marquez. But the trio that we are talking about, it's, of course, Tyler Anderson, John Gray, and Jeff Hoffman. Jeff Hoffman yesterday, 4 2/3, 8 hits, 7 runs, 4 earned, 5 strikeouts, 2 walks.
Which was the good sign was that he actually struck people out.
Yeah.
He has had a lot of trouble missing bats in his first 5 starts, but he had 5 Ks and 4 2/3. It was like a crap sandwich. Started out poorly, was really good in the middle few innings, and then was really bad in the fifth.
Jeff Hoffman in 2016.
Well, I guess that wouldn't be a crap sandwich because the crap's in the middle.
Yeah.
It's like the bread was crap. It was like a double down.
It's like a reverse.
Yeah.
Oh my god,
it's like a double down of crap.
That is disgusting.
2 pieces of crap put in between, like, you know, bacon and cheese.
Bacon and cheese in the middle of 2 pieces of crap. Yeah, that works.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Jeff Hoffman has thrown so far this season 141 innings combined between AAA Albuquerque and the major leagues. The Rockies will be limiting him down the stretch, as they will with Tyler Anderson, who also, as you will recall, got a late start to the 2016 season due to, it was an oblique with Tyler Anderson coming out of spring training. Wasn't that it?
I believe his legs fell off.
That was it. His legs fell off. His head fell off. So those two guys will be limited innings wise down the stretch, which is really something that we expected. And I'm honestly surprised didn't come into play before right now.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
So that's fine. Especially with Jeff Hoffman, because coming into this year, he had only thrown 104 total innings as a professional last year when he recovered from Tommy John surgery, got started late with the Blue Jays system, and then obviously was part of the trade, the hallowed LaTroy Hawkins trade, which is what we'll call it.
That's what we're going to call it now.
The Hawkins trade.
Yeah.
So Jeff Hoffman, you know, he's shown flashes of being good, but not a lot of them, not as many as you would have wished to have seen by now.
He's super good at giving up unearned runs.
That fourth appearance that he had, he's given up 7 unearned runs.
He's given up 12.
Yeah.
How is unearned runs in 22 and a third innings? He got up 15 earned runs in that time and 12 unearned.
Yeah, I don't get that.
Good.
He has not yet turned in an outing, there was one outing. His one fairly decent start, although he didn't strike anybody out. That was a weird start against the Dodgers in the second game of that doubleheader on the 31st. He went 5 innings in that game, 3 hits, 2 runs. He walked 3 and didn't strike out anybody, which was strange.
I want to point out that the 12 unearned runs are the most given up by any Rockies pitcher this season.
And he's made 5 starts.
In 5 starts.
That was the only start he made, of which he didn't give up an unearned run. The next outing against the Padres, 2 2/3, 6 hits, 7 runs, all unearned.
That's pretty amazing.
Like, how?
I don't know how that works.
They all came in the third inning for the Padres, but baseball's weird.
Pretty amazing.
Jeff Hoffman, by the way, has struck out 13 batters. 11 of them have come on the road because Coors. But Hoffman, you know, he's struggled so far 0-4 with a 6.04 ERA through his first 5 outings. Opponents are batting .313 against him.
Not great, Bob.
John Gray has really, really struggled since the calendar turned away from July. He was brilliant in July, 1.89 ERA over 5 starts. August, 6 starts, 6.21, and he struggled in September as well. The ERA is at 8.18 through 2 outings. He has not picked up a pitcher win since August 2nd. And that was the last of 3 straight victories, and it sent his ERA down to a season low 3.77. Since then, in the pitcher wins category, he has gone 1-4, and the ERA has spiked nearly a full run per game to 4.69. And Tyler Anderson has struggled over his last handful of times out as well. He did have the really good start against the Dodgers on August 31st, 6 1/3, 6 hits, no runs. He struck out 5 and walked 2. That came on the heels of his best strikeout performance of the year, in which he took a loss against the Brewers despite striking out 10 and giving up 2 runs on 3 hits over 5 innings. Struck out 10, by the way, only threw 90 pitches in that game. That was one of his really, really good outings. But since then, last couple of times out, last time was a big struggle against the D-backs, 5 runs earned of 6 total over 4 1/3. So these guys, you know, somewhat coming up against it, but not a bad thing. That's not a bad thing.
I also want to point out that Jeff Hoffman's 12 earned runs are the fourth most in the National League this year. Which is, there's only been six pitchers to give up double digits in unearned runs, and Jeff Hoffman's done it in five starts.
He's only thrown 22 and a third innings. Makes sense. It all makes sense.
Oh, anyway. Yes, John Gray. The swings and misses are what always gets me with John Gray, because whenever you see the slider doing its thing for John Gray, that means he's got a lot of tilt on it. It means he's really deceiving the batters as best as possible, and that's when you see him at his by far best. When he struggled this year is when he's been unable to get swings and misses with his slider. And over the last couple of starts, that's been a bit of an issue for him. And we've seen that kind of happen. It's been either a bad inning over a year or over a game or so, or it's been, you know, snowballed on him. But really over the last couple of starts, he has two combined swings and misses with his slider. That's it. Which is a problem, because the previous two starts against Milwaukee and the Dodgers, he had 17 combined swings and misses.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about that this year. Anthony's had really good numbers start to start on John Gray, and how effective. I mean, the correlation between how good he is and how often he's getting swings and misses on that slider is very evident.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I would have to run the actual numbers, and I can do that, you know, when the season's over and crunch. See what we can actually see. Just crunch those numbers.
Just crunch them.
Just crunch them.
Beep,
just
boop, beep, beep. Crunch them.
Is that crunch?
That's how it sounds on your computer screen.
Beep, bop, boop, beep, bop, boop, boop,
beep, beep, boop. Crunch. It probably says crunch at the
crunch.
End.
Crunch. Now, I would venture to say that when he does well, there's at least five swings and misses with his slider a game. And so he's had as many as 15 this year with that pitch in a game. That was that 12 strikeout performance at San Diego back in June. But he's had double-digit swings and misses with that slider four times this season. He averages around 6 to 7 per game this year, even when he's doing poorly, because he's had those other games that have brought up that average a little bit. But yeah, the last two starts against Arizona and San Diego, just two whiffs at all with that slider. And that is an issue. And he comes with throwing more innings than he has in many of his minor league seasons in college. He's getting to a point where it's late in the season. He hasn't really pitched probably into middle September at all ever in his career. So even just if it's not the innings, it's the timing, it's the number of pitches, it's the time of year. And you can kind of see that, you know, he's just hitting that wall a little bit, which is a totally normal thing. It happens to everybody. And right now it's kind of happening to John Gray. And, you know, he made it through seven innings in that start against Arizona back on September 4th, which is a good thing. But the problem was, he'd given up one earned run going into the seventh and then gave up four, because that's what happens when you get to that point. So even if the wall hadn't hit him that poorly until that seventh inning, but then the next start against San Diego was very not good. And I don't know. It's been a lot of great things you see from John Gray, and it sucks that his poor starts are going to make that final line look so bad. because there's so many good things to like from John Gray this season, but his overall numbers, you're going to just look at him at the end of the day and go, oh, well, I guess he was okay.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
that's the problem.
Yeah. I mean, you certainly would have to have seen his work, his entire body of work throughout the season to realize what a positive it's been. Because
the FIP is 3.75,
right,
which is very good.
Right. And especially compared to what it was like at the beginning of the year when John Gray just couldn't catch a break on anything. You know, so I think there are a ton of positives to take away from this season for John Gray. But if you were somebody who was just looking at, you know, the numbers by the end of the season, if you were a national media voter, let's say, you're not going to look at John Gray and be blown away by it.
Yeah.
By his season. But there are a ton of good things to take away from it. With Tyler Anderson, I don't think you can look at – if Tyler Anderson went out the rest of the season and gave up six runs over three innings every time out, I still don't think you look at this season as anything other than a shockingly fantastic breakout year for a guy that a whole hell of a lot of people had given up on.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't know what to expect from Tyler Anderson coming into this year, but you cannot deny what he has done. He has been one of the most consistent pitchers we have had that we've seen in a long, long time. The ERA 3.65 and the FIP at 3.61, which is pretty amazing. Almost the exact same. 91 Ks in 101 innings. He's only walked 26. I mean, what has this kid not done that we've wanted to see from him? I mean, come on. His last start against Arizona was one of his worst of the year, 4 1/3, 6 runs, 5 earned on 9 hits. Did strike out 7. And that's the thing. When we see Tyler Anderson putting up his worst lines, we generally see him striking out more batters. In that game against the Cubs, he gave up 5 runs on 8 hits in 7 innings, struck out 8. The game against the D-backs, as mentioned, struck out 7 4 1/3. He only went 5 innings in the game at Milwaukee that they lost, but he struck out 10. You know, it's weird that we see him putting up the worst stat lines, but the higher strikeout numbers, because he's not a strikeout guy, and he's only thrown 100 pitches 5 times this year. So they've been really done a pretty good job at keeping his pitch count down, his innings down, and he's done a great job in and of himself by not hurting himself with walks. His 2.3 walks per nine is very, very good, especially when you compare it with an 8K per nine, so 3.5 strikeout to walk ratio, which is very, very good for a Rockies pitcher. You don't hurt yourself. He's given up only 11 home runs this year in 101 innings, which is pretty good as well. I mean, he gets a lot of ground balls. He keeps his innings down. He's averaged about 15 pitches per inning, which is what you want. I mean, Tyler Anderson he's put himself in the conversation for an opening day start next year, in my opinion. I mean, John Gray will probably get it, but Tyler Anderson,
right,
he's been by far the most consistent starter the Rockies have had this season.
And look at Tyler Anderson's numbers at home. Tyler Anderson at Coors Field this year, one of the things that has stacked up a little bit strange, he's pitched of his 101 total innings, he's only pitched 30 on the road, and that's just a quirk of the schedule, but that's a quirk of the schedule that you would ordinarily be like, oh God, look at the way this kid's getting screwed.
Yeah.
He's got to throw 71 of his 100 innings at home. In those 71 innings at home, Tyler Anderson has made 11 starts. He is 5-1 with a 3.04 ERA. He struck out 61 and walked 18 in 71 innings. He has given up 7 of his 11 homers at home, as you would expect, but that's pretty much the same average, actually a little bit less, a homer every 10 innings or thereabouts at home versus a little bit more than one every 10 when he is on the road. He's given up 4 1/30 innings on the road, and I'm not good at math, but I know that's a higher ratio. His numbers at Coors Field have been fantastic this year.
Yeah, you want to look at just among all Rockies pitchers who have put in basically a full season at home. Only Jorge De La Rosa's 2013 season has posted a better ERA at home. Tyler Chatwood, if you give him enough innings there, he will make that obviously this year too. On the road he's been very good. A couple years ago he was good at home. But De La Rosa was 276 at home in 2013 when he went 10-1 that year, hashtag pitcher wins. Tyler Anderson's number 2 on that list, 3.04 with that ERA. So you're sandwiched for Tyler Anderson between two Jorge De La Rosa seasons at Coors Field, which he has, you know, done very, very well at home, and then Ubaldo's 2010 is right behind him.
Ah, Ubaldo. By the way, congratulations to former Rocky Ubaldo Jimenez, who became a United States citizen this week.
Former Rocky Rocky and current U.S. citizen. Good for him.
Ubaldo Jimenez.
Yeah, you look at the best fielding independent pitching in Rockies history for a single season, just in general, not even at home, just in general. Ubaldo in 2010 and 2009, of course, you would top the list. That makes total sense. Jolie Chastain in 2013, Ubaldo again in 2011, Jolie Chastain in 2010. He was very, very good. And then Tyler Anderson comes in at number 6 all time with 3.61 fielding independent pitching. John Gray, number 14 on the list for this year too. But, you know, you take out fielding, you put some park effects in there as well, and it is, you know, Tyler Anderson put together one of the better seasons in Rockies history right now, especially as a rookie.
And if you want to know maybe at least part of the reason why, our good pal Mike Petriello had an outstanding story on MLB.com a few weeks ago about the way Tyler Anderson tries to limit contact, hard contact especially, because his exit velocity, I believe, is still like in the top 3 of qualifying major league pitchers is the lowest exit velocity of balls that come off the bats of opposing hitters. And, you know, the thing I like about Tyler Anderson, his skill set is so different from so much of what we talk about with basically every other pitcher in baseball. Because with John Gray, it's, oh man, look at the wipeout slider. Look at the Bugs Bunny off-speed stuff that he has. With Jeff Hoffman, it's similar stuff. With Tyler Anderson, it's, look at the way he throws like 4 different kinds of fastballs and how he mixes them. It's so strange. He takes velocity off in certain counts. The way he's able to manipulate that one facet of his game is fascinating. I mean, that's so weird.
Also, Mike Petriello said that he is better than Clayton Kershaw already.
Yeah, he said he's the best pitcher in baseball history as of this stage in his career.
Yeah,
I just, think. Yeah. I think that's
I'm pretty sure that's
said.
What Mike said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty sure that was it. So, long story short, it's okay for these guys to be getting to the end of this season and be struggling. And you know why? Because you want them to be good in 2017, and you want them to hit this wall at some point before you get there.
Yes.
For Jeff, especially coming off his first full professional, not even his first full professional season, because he didn't get started until after a month into the season last year. This is his first full season as a professional baseball player. He's going to get to the end of this, and he's going to wear down. Tyler Anderson, same way. Tyler Anderson did not throw a competitive inning last year. Tyler Anderson was, whatever it was, 19 months away from a competitive mound when he got on the mound this year in spring training, or, you know, when he got started in the regular season, which was late after opening day because of the injury coming out of spring training. And for John Gray, you know, John Gray is still working as you would want John Gray to work. He is not limited. He is going down the stretch and is still putting. He just put in seven innings, you know, two starts ago against the D-backs at home on September 4th. So this is not what we saw last year with John Gray, where it's, oh, they're babying him. He still can't go out there and throw a full innings worth of season's worth of innings. No, he's going out there and he's being the workhorse that you want him to be.
Yeah, they really. Yeah, he really has been. And it's a good thing to have, because going to next year, you're going to have, you have to imagine Gray and Anderson at the top of the rotation, Chatwood and Bettis, who is kind of pitching himself into that 2017 mix right now. And then if Hoffman comes through over the offseason, puts in his work, comes back ready to go beginning of spring training next year, you got five guys, I think, who have a lot of talent in that rotation.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. And that doesn't even take into account guys like Germán Márquez or Kyle Freeland. Kyle Freeland finished the season fantastically for the AAA Topes in Albuquerque. Kyle Freeland, over his stretch run, he ended up finishing the season 6-3 with a 3.91 ERA after being promoted to Albuquerque. Freeland, in August, was at his best. He went 3-1 with a 3.73 ERA, and then in his final start of the season in September against El Paso, a team that right now is playing for a Pacific Coast League championship, he went six innings, did not allow a run on four hits. So Kyle Freeland was really, really good down the stretch in Albuquerque. Germán Márquez got a late promotion. He got a quick sniff of the AAA ranks. He made five starts there, went 2-0 with a 4.35 ERA. So there are other guys who are there in the mix, you don't even have to talk about, because the Rockies right now have five guys in the major league level who are effective. And you mentioned Chad Bettis. For as much as Chad Bettis had really, really struggled, I mean, Bettis exited June with an ERA of 5.84. In July, he was outstanding. A 3.55 mark, he went 3-1 in six starts and really kind of brought himself back to the table. August was a bit more of a struggle, five starts, a 5.19 ERA, but he's been really good. I mean, obviously, the complete game shutout against the Giants helps, but he's been really good so far in September. Seven innings on the road at San Diego, gave up two runs on four hits and a no decision. When Chad Bettis is good, he's as good as anybody that they could expect to be a mid-rotation guy.
Yeah, he's lowered his ERA by two full runs in the second half. He's 5.65 in the first half, 3.48 in the second.
Yeah.
So his name is in the mix, that's for sure.
Certainly. And Tyler Chatwood, remember earlier in the year when he left that start on, I think it was the June 18 start against the Marlins? He went an inning and two thirds, left the start. Yeah, because then we didn't see him again until July 5th, and he basically just handed the ball and walked straight to the dugout. And you think, like, ugh, two-time Tommy John survivor, this is the last thing in the world you want to see. And since then, he's been fine, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Tyler Chatwood overall this year, 11-9, 3.82 ERA. Now, granted, it's been because he's been so effing good on the road. He still has an ERA of 1.77 away from Coors Field in 11 starts.
That's stupid.
And yeah, he struggled a bit at Coors Field. But
Coors.
That, you know, if you're going to get that type of work on the road, I think you would take a guy who puts up an ERA of 5.5.
I think so. Yeah.
He's going to throw 11 starts with a 7-1 record and a 1.77 ERA away from opponents.
I'll take it.
192 against him on the road.
Coors, man. Speaking of Coors, I mean, we have Ask PDP questions, I believe.
We do have some Ask PDP questions. Indeed. Indeed, we do. And let us get to them, because there are some good ones. And, you know, all of them are good ones. Let's start with David Parrott, and I want to first, before we get into this, I want to thank David and take a moment to discuss something that he tweeted into us. Many of you are familiar and know and love Captain Earthman, who is a longtime Denver sports institution, a beer vendor who works in the left field pavilion at Coors Field, works Broncos games, works concerts at Red Rocks. I think he's done stuff at Pepsi Center. He's been everywhere in this town for decades, and is currently suffering from a brain tumor. And there was a GoFundMe page that was set up by his, I don't know if it's his wife or just his partner, but she set up a GoFundMe page to help cover some of their expenses. David tweeted that into us. We retweeted it. And you can still find it up on our Twitter feed, and the Denver media has started to kind of run with that story as well. I know Nine News did a story. Earthman has been, like I said, an institution in town for a very long time, and a guy who's really made a lot of people smile over his time as a Rockies vendor, especially because, you know, he's there for 81 days a year, huffing beers around in the sweltering heat, wearing his peanut earrings. And he has, you know, the hat with the, I don't know if he still has the Budweiser frogs, but for like 10 years after they ended that ad campaign, so the Budweiser frogs coming out of his hat. And Earthman's an awesome dude. He bought me my first legal beer when I turned 21 years old. I was at the Rockies A's game that night at Coors, and, you know, just a guy who has made himself into a folk hero, and nobody deserves to be dealing with what he's dealing with, but to have a community that's able to rally around him, go find that link. We'll tweet it out again. But a big thanks to David for bringing that to our attention.
Yeah, absolutely.
And David, tweeted this question in, quote, what do you think John Gray's future is with the Rockies? I heard he had a pretty good August for the Isotopes, which I think is a 2015 question. He's just resubmitted for 2016. David, here's what we have. But no, I wanted to thank David for bringing that to our attention, because that's something we really wanted to get behind, and you should too. We will get to a real question, which is from Nick Stellini. How much wood would Dinger chuck if Dinger could chuck wood, from Nick Stellini?
And Nick, of course, everyone knows the answer is 6. Next question.
Okay.
I like this one from our friend Tyler at TCakes11. Ask PDP, who builds more walls this offseason, Jay Bridich or D. Trump?
Yeah, and I like how he went the old Hoss Radburn route and just using first initial last name. You know, I'm gonna go Jay Bridich here. I think there will be many walls built, and we're going to make the Diamondbacks pay for them.
Yeah, we're sealed. The Diamondbacks, if we're lucky,
our neighbors to the south, will make the D-backs pay for them.
Speaking of the Diamondbacks, if you can go online and go read Jeff Passan's excoriation of Tony La Russa, just the opening paragraph alone is enough to get you through the rest of your day.
Yeah, we'll read that real quick. It's about Adam Jones. It's about Colin Kaepernick, the national anthem protest, whatever. Quote. Tony La Russa, a convicted drunk driver who managed one of the most steroid-addled clubhouses in modern baseball history and today oversees an organization that at the trade deadline passed along to multiple organizations private medical information about a player it wanted to deal, spent Wednesday playing moralist, a role that suits him about as well as chief baseball officer for a major league franchise. My
God.
That paragraph is better than anything I've ever written in my entire life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jeff Passan is awesome.
That was
yeah
really fun.
That is something. The D-backs, oh man. Anthony tweeted yesterday, the D-backs just continue making themselves easier and easier to mock. And good God, Tony La Russa. There was a conversation that I saw on D-backs Twitter today, which is you could let this go if Tony La Russa and Dave Stewart appeared to have any idea what they were doing. But the fact that not only are they embarrassing you on the field continually, but now they're humiliating you off the field. How on earth, if you're Derek Hall, how have you not fired these two already?
I mean, unfortunately, Derek Hall is going through a lot of health issues with his wife as well right now.
I did not know that.
Yeah, she was diagnosed with cancer earlier this year.
Derek Hall seems like the nicest human being on the planet, by the way. He's the D-backs, I think she, I think
CEO, CEO not is, COO, but I think the president,
actually,
I think.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Maybe that's his title. I can't remember his actual title. Yeah, he is president, team president. President and CEO. So we were both correct. Derek Hall seems like a phenomenal human being, like just a really, really nice guy. A guy who, I mean, I know just speaking from the side of experience where I've seen some of the work that he's done. When the D-backs played the Major League season opener in Sydney in 2014, I was doing work the Australian League and got to work a little bit with the D-backs PR side. And Derek Hall was so hands-on in, we want to get our players out in the community. We want our players doing youth camps with kids in Australia. We're going to send they sent Patrick Corbin over like 6 months before that game, when Patrick Corbin was still the frontline guy or one of the frontline guys for the D-backs. The Dodgers sent A.J. Ellis. Nothing against A.J. Ellis, but, you know, they didn't send Clayton Kershaw. They weren't out there sending Yasiel Puig. They sent a guy who they had available and, you know, whatever. But Derek Hall wanted to make sure that his guys, his frontline guys, were ambassadors for that trip. He seems like a phenomenal human being. And what a storm of crap he's had to deal with this year. He did that Reddit AMA.
Oh, God, yeah.
Man, just throwing yourself to the wolves.
Yeah.
It's gotten to the point where I almost feel bad for some of these people in the D-backs organization.
I know. Yeah, his wife announced she has breast cancer. It was back in July. Ugh. And Derek Hall had prostate cancer back in September.
Yeah, I do remember that.
So, you know, it's just too bad that he's had to deal with all of that crap.
Yeah,
because those two guys have brought to that organization.
Yeah, on top of that, he's had to deal with this just garbage heap that Tony La Russa and Dave Stewart have created. If you can go find, it's another link we tweeted out, but go find the Reddit Ask Me Anything with Derek Hall, because D-backs fans not pleased, and I cannot blame them. Speaking of people who will not make it through 2016, there is zero way. If Tony La Russa thought he had a chance to hang around after 2016, I don't think yesterday made it happen.
No, La Russa will be there.
Do you really think so?
Yeah. I think Stewart will be gone.
Wow.
I think he'll be the fall guy.
Huh. Man, that fascinates me.
Yeah.
Interesting. In answer to Tyler's question, I think it'll be Jay Breidich, and yeah. I think they'll make the D-backs pay for it. Cody, at Cody the Ham, tweeted him, will either of you eventually replace Drew Goodman and Jeff Hewson as announcers?
Boy, we would really like to.
We'd enjoy it, but I think everybody hates us over there. Not on the Rocky side of things.
Not on the Rocky side. On the Root side, I don't think we have a lot of friends.
But on the Root side, can't imagine. Can't imagine they really like us that much. It would be a ton of fun.
That would be, I think, a dream job for both of us, to be perfectly honest. So
also, we even volunteered to run a Dinger Twitter account. And we were turned down in that regard.
Turned down very quickly.
I even told Julian that we would make sure to not cuss. And he said, no thanks.
I don't think he believed us.
Oh, man. That would be the best social media move that they could possibly make. Just us eviscerating opposing fans who rip on Dinger all the time. I thought we did have a whole bunch of serious Ask PDP questions. And it turns out that we
totally made that up.
We did get one from, I believe, our good pal Thomas Norwood, who tweeted in to ask us, and I can't remember the exact phrasing of his question right now, but the CBA is going to be up this year. At the end of this season, going into the 2017 season, what are some of the things that we would like to see accomplished in the next CBA? To me, that's the collective bargaining agreement. It's what has, you know, sent seasons into strikes and into freezes in years past. To me, baseball has discovered labor disputes. Not really so good for business. So that's good. At least we've gotten to that point where they decide, no, let's do this all over the offseason. Let's make sure that we actually get it done going into next year. Here's the actual question. This is more for after the season, but any major changes you want to the CBA since it's up this winter? What I would really like to see accomplished this season, and I think these are two big topics on the table. One, figure out a way to not make free agent signings tied to the draft, because we've seen over the past few seasons, you know, Stephen Drew really comes to mind, the way he sat out until the middle of the season, I think in 2014.
J.D. Drew? just Drew, the Drew brothers? The
Drew family apparently has just been big issues with this. But when you tie a free agent to the loss of a draft pick, teams don't want to throw money at free agents. And that doesn't punish the teams. It punishes those guys who have no control over that. And then all of a sudden are sitting around waiting for somebody to come calling in June and July. And that's not fair. So I think they need to figure out a solution to that. I also think they need to really figure out the parameters for dealing draft selections, not necessarily draft picks, but, and this was a rule that was changed after the Trey Turner deal, but I think there need to be clarified parameters as to when you draft a guy, is he then, it used to be you couldn't trade him until a year after he had been drafted. So the Padres agreed to trade Trey Turner to the Nationals 6 months after the draft, and then couldn't actually trade him until June.
Which is so great.
So he's sat around one that they traded him 6 months. Yeah. It's great that they traded him. But he sat around awkwardly for 6 months. Drew Pomeranz is the same way. So that I think needs to be clarified as well.
Yeah.
And also, I think there will be continued discussions of an international draft. I don't think that's going to happen this year. It should happen. But that'll be an interesting topic as well.
Yeah, I definitely don't know enough about it at the moment to say what would be better. But I nothing that I've ever read about the international draft makes it seem like it would at all be feasible.
Yeah, or really...
Or good for the players.
Right, exactly. Yeah. There has been a resurgence of good talent from Puerto Rico in the major leagues over the last few years. Carlos Correa obviously leads that conversation, but for a long time, Puerto Rico really fell off the map as a baseball power. And there was a very, very good story, I believe, in the New York Times. It's probably about 5 years old now or so. And this conversation recently came up again. Craig Calcaterra from Hardball Talk linked to that story in a discussion about Puerto Rico and how it had really struggled because Major League Baseball is now putting some money into youth development and baseball resources back in Puerto Rico. But the underlying theme, at least from a few years ago, was Puerto Rico used to be like the Dominican Republic. It was like Venezuela or Colombia or these other Latin American countries, not Cuba. Cuba, obviously, kind of its own
different story altogether with Cuba.
Right, because of the embargo and all that stuff. But it used to be in Puerto Rico that teams would go in, they would have their complexes, they would develop players, they would be able to sign those players at 16. So when you identify a baseball talent at 12, 13, 14 years old, you can bring that kid out. You can have them work out for you. You can do those types of things and invest a lot in a kid that you will eventually be able to sign as a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
In Puerto Rico, when Puerto Rico was brought under the draft umbrella, and it's only the United States, Canada, and Puerto Rico that are under that draft umbrella, then teams decided, well, what am I going to invest all this money in if I'm going to pay millions of dollars to train a kid, get him ready to go as a professional, and then all of a sudden he's going to get thrown into the draft pool and the friggin' Marlins can get him. What is my incentive to develop players? And so as teams started to pull out of Puerto Rico, that's really where the youth baseball culture started to take a dive, and that was in the early 90s. And it has rebounded. I mean, there's a lot of good talent that's come out of Puerto Rico in recent years. They played for a World Baseball Classic title in 2013, but it is... a conversation that
Carlos Correa is their big star at this
point. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But it's a conversation that is really, really complicated because Major League Baseball has wanted an international draft for a long time. But what does that mean for the infrastructure for all of these massive complexes that teams have built in the Dominican and much lesser degree now in Venezuela because of the situation there? But that's an interesting topic as well. I don't think it's going to be covered or solved in the CBA negotiations this year, but still a pretty interesting topic. So there's a conversation piece, and something to keep in the old radar. But I think that's about all for AskPD.
Yeah.
And I think it might be all for this week's edition.
I believe so. I think we've done our due diligence getting back here and getting back on the airwaves. I mean, I know people missed us clearly.
Get the people what they crave.
Yeah. Which is
an hour of us going, I don't know what's going on.
An hour of us going, whatever. About a bad baseball team.
Five games under 500 until they went to Arizona and got their heads smashed in for three days.
Great.
It's perfect sense. So anyway, that's the theme of the 2016 Rockies, not being able to play up to bad teams. And when you look back on what went wrong this season, you can point the finger there. Rockies are 9 games under 500. In total, they are 11 games under 500 against teams under 500.
Woo!
Makes zero sense whatsoever. Hey, buy our shirts. PurpleDinosaurPodcast.BigCartel.com. And you can get in touch with the show, purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com. We are also on the old Twitter machine at Purple Dinocast. We're the pariahs of Rocky's Twitter. Anthony is at Master Tones, and I am at Tyler Mon. And yeah, I think that does it, right?
I think so.
All right.
Number 87 in the books.
87. 13 away from 100.
Oh, wow.
I'm not going to get there until next season, because once we hit the offseason, Anthony and I don't talk.
No.
We hate
each other. For good reason.
We hate each other.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yes.
When are you getting married?
Next September.
September. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to give you a chance to RSVP. I'm going to see if you do or not.
Okay. We'll see. We'll see if I do. We'll see if I don't.
Yeah. I'll give you a chance.
Oh, man. I don't know, man. I just live my life day to day. Make things happen.
Like always.
okay. Until next week, and we will be back next week.
Yes, we will.
But until next week, enjoy another steaming weekend of Rockies baseball. They're back home against the Padres, so probably it'll be a 6-game losing streak by the time this weekend is over. Talk to you next week. Bye. Bye.
Okay, this is 87. We do not have one until next time out. Josh Outman.
Josh Outman.
The Outman.
Who didn't get anyone out, man.
I don't get it.
Because he was a pitcher. Get it?
No.
Get it?
No.
See, the thing about pitching, you're trying to get people out.
I don't get it.
And his last name was Outman.
I don't get it.
An ironic turn of phrase, given that he often struggled to get them out.
I'm still trying to get it.
Okay, let me try this from a different angle.
Explain it to me like I'm fine.
Josh Outman actually really was not that bad.
No, he wasn't terrible.
In his second year here. His first year, he was atrocious.
Yeah.
Only the Rockies could somehow have a guy post an 8.19 ERA and still throw him out there for 27 appearances.
And bring him back.
So, yeah, and then bring him back. Oh, my God.